ready? Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Red Flags, Green Flags, Modern Psychology for Everyday Drama. In season two, we are focusing on work relationships, specifically looking at red and green flags in the workplace. As most of our time is consumed by our job or profession, workplace conflicts are an inescapable part of everyday life. Now, the aim of this season is to help you better understand the drama that happens at work and to provide you deep insights to why people behave the way they do. Also, we will discuss different strategies on how to deal with workplace drama, from working with difficult colleagues and managers to surviving toxic work environments. By using a psychological lens to interpret real-life experiences at work, we can gain better insights on how best to navigate the complexity of a modern workplace. Now, during this podcast, I will talk about toxic work environments from the factors that shape them to the impact they have on people's mindsets and behaviors. On social media, people often complain that the environment they work in is toxic. It is easy to label something as toxic when we don't like something. But what is a toxic environment, and how do we distinguish a toxic environment from a healthy one? A positive organizational culture can give you a sense of purpose, keep you engaged, and even enhance your self-esteem. But a toxic work culture can also make you stressed, sick, and even behave in ways you thought not possible before. We often underestimate how powerful the environment can be on individual or group behavior and also on one's well-being. So joining me on my podcast today to talk about toxic environments and management misbehaviors is serial entrepreneur Carl Felder, founder of Nutrafuels, which is the biggest biofuel company here in the Middle East. Carl, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ali. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Well, coming from one environment to another, this is definitely not a toxic environment. You've given me coffee, so let's see where it goes.
So probably one of the hallmarks we'll find out is having coffee makes your environment less toxic.
Well, definitely. It's a nice environment. And lighting definitely impacts environments as well. It's somebody was talking to me about this as well. In all of my offices, and I've been running my own businesses now for 34 years, in all my offices, I've always had music. And it's part of relaxing people, part of getting people to be more comfortable. If you can make it a little bit more like home, people will relax more.
Yeah. It's an interesting point you make, and I guess we can dive into that when we go much more deep into what toxic environments are. But many companies nowadays seem to want to be something more of a homely environment where you can play ping pong and, you know, play games and relax.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy that. You're right, they do that, but I don't have a ping pong table at home, and I certainly wouldn't want one in the office. The noise of it would drive me mad. But I think that feels almost like you're trying to force something that isn't there. I think if people really want to be there and you get the environment right, then they will organize themselves. I think a couple of sofas in the office is a good plan.
Sofas are good. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, look, Carl, I've known you for many years, and we've worked together in various capacities. The audience doesn't know you yet, so maybe you can give a brief introduction to who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name's Carl Felder. I've created, set up, sold probably 8 companies now, taken 2 public. And I moved to the Middle East in 2009 to do what people thought was completely mad, which was to set up a biofuels business. There was no biofuels anywhere in the Middle East. And today we're the biggest biofuels producer in the Middle East. We managed to get through all the red tape and all the complexity of setting up something that didn't exist. And it's done well. And, you know, we've managed to have some of the world's biggest brands as our customers. We got a great partnership with McDonald's. We supply Emirates Airline. You know, it really has turned into something quite wonderful. But I couldn't have done any of that without a great team around me. And maybe we'll get to this, but I don't think I'm a narcissist. I don't think I'm a psychopath. I'm a regular guy who happens to be good at getting the best out of other people.
Excellent. Well, we can maybe talk a little bit later about narcissism and you know, psychopaths in the organization. Before we get started, you know, talking about toxicity, what would then be your toxic trait?
I suppose the most difficult thing people find is that I'm pretty intense. And I'm pretty intense for more hours of the day than most human beings can cope with. Certainly my wife would say that, and some of my closest friends would say that as well, that I can be pretty intense at 6:30 in the morning and I'm still being intense at 11 o'clock at night. And that is just way too much 7 days a week for most human beings to cope with. I've seen it in other entrepreneurs as well. And I think one of the ways that you mitigate that is you become emotionally self-aware and you moderate your own behavior by monitoring what you're doing and you look at the body language and how other people respond to it. So I wasn't like that for a long time. I wasn't able to moderate, but I grew and I learned. And that's how I've got better in business.
So reflecting back on, you know, having that passion in the organization, maybe now you're able to moderate better than you were in the past. How did that, I won't call it the uncontrollable part of, you know, of having so much energy in the workplace, but how did that affect other people?
Well, a lot of people struggle to keep up because they feel that they don't want to let you down. So they feel they've got to keep up. And if they're not naturally got that much energy, it's physically impossible for them to do it. Entrepreneurs are a weird bunch of people. We are, my research would say less than 3% of the population are in that sort of category. We don't tend to sleep very much. Coincidentally, we've all lost a parent before the age of 10, one of the weird things. But we also have this boundless energy and enthusiasm for positivity. And we'll always see a glass as half full. And we're always looking for the bright side. Always willing to find opportunities where they don't exist and also wake up every morning thinking the world's broken and we're the only people that can fix it. That's us. But for other people, trying
there
to...
There has to be kind of... I would almost say, and it's a common characteristic I see amongst a lot of entrepreneurs, is that there has to be some stubbornness or... Well, stubbornness is probably a big word, but probably that kind of perseverance.
It's tenacity.
Tenacity, yeah.
We're naturally blessed with this tenacity. Knock us down and we just get up even more. And I dread to think what would happen if an entrepreneur became a boxer, because they'd probably just keep getting up until they were dead.
Or a rock star.
Well, I mean, that works well. Number of times I've been out on stage and everything's just been a complete disaster. And I just carry on. We did a whole gig once and we only got to the end when we realized that the audience couldn't hear a thing. All of the music was coming back to us from the onstage monitors. We heard ourselves perfectly. Audience couldn't hear a thing because they'd forgotten to switch on the external speakers. That was another great thing.
Okay, well, good one. And so, Carl, tell me a little bit more. How would you describe what a toxic environment is? And maybe how would you know if you are in a toxic environment?
I think I've lived through one or two. Thankfully, not organizations I've created, but organizations I would work with. And I'd say that the definition of a toxic environment is when you wake up first thing in the morning and you have a dread at the bottom of your stomach, an absolute fear of going to work because you know it's going to be purgatory for the whole day. You're going to suffer. You're going to feel physically sick. And people are going to do things to you both physically and psychologically that you're not going to enjoy. That level of toxicity, as you said in your introduction, is extremely bad for your health, not just your mental health, but your physical health as well.
So I get that. So you're saying one way is that when you wake up in the morning, you realize that you're not feeling good about going to work. I could see that also as a consequence. But if we take that a little bit, you know, we take that back a little bit, what would be some specific examples that you could look for or you could identify in the workplace that would, you know, kind of be an indicator that this environment's not really good?
We're trying to put this in a sort of positive light. But I mean, in environments that aren't toxic, there's a great sense of respect. And that respect is more that you respect your boss and he respects you. You respect your peers. And that generally within the organization, when you walk in the morning, you say hello to the receptionist because he or she is doing a job that you couldn't do. You couldn't sit there all day long answering the phone and being friendly to people like that. They're doing a job you couldn't do, so you owe them respect. So respect is at the heart of a non-toxic environment. Ergo, in a toxic environment, there is no respect. People treat you awfully. They'll treat you like dirt. They'll shout at you. They'll scream at you. They'll belittle you. They'll
walk over you.
They'll physically stand when you're sitting down. So they'll try and use physical presence to dominate the conversation. They'll talk over the top of your points. You will say three things and they'll immediately dismiss them. They'll tell you you're stupid. I mean, I've been in environments, I've heard people say, oh, I don't know what it is to work with idiots, but I can't work with idiots and you're an idiot. I mean, in just about every environment, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
And it's demeaning. And it's designed to belittle you, to make the other person, the one that is creating the toxicity, to make them feel better about themselves. Now, for people listening to this, for your audience out there, the only real thing I can suggest for them, if somebody's doing that to you in the work environment, just remember that they're doing that to you because they are insecure. It's because they don't think they should be there. They actually think that they're faking it in their environment.
Maybe even scared by your performance.
Oh, they're definitely. If you're competent, they'll be petrified that somebody will find out that you're better at the job than them. Now, again, turn it around. I've always worked really hard to employ people that are better than me.
Yeah.
Because I think if they're better than me, cracky, then the whole organization's going to be fantastic. Whereas in toxic environments, people try always, if you've got an A star player, they'll try and recruit a B team player.
Right.
And they'll try and recruit C team people. Right. And the whole organization suffers.
Yeah.
And people spend their whole time trying to cover up mistakes and inadequacies.
Yeah, I often say like A players choose A players and B players choose C players. And I've seen that happen so often in the workplace. And it's unfortunate because you get a lot of people that have a lot of insecurities or, you know, oh, they have ulterior motives or they, you know, they just definitely don't consider the other person or have what you said, have respect for other people. And they just walk over people to get where they want to get. And it was really interesting because there are studies that actually show that high performers in organizations are often not the bullies. They're often the ones that get bullied. And that's very interesting, right? So you often think, well, oh, yes, a star player, but often the people around you, the people that feel very insecure by you, I think that's something to also consider. Also for a lot of people listening right now is that, yes, it's great to be an A player. It's great to be a high performer, but besides the performance, you also need to think about your environment and how do you protect yourself in that environment?
So it's, we'll also find that those bullies will be the people that are trying to take credit for everything. They'll take credit for your work, for your colleagues' work, and they'll report it up the chain as if it was stuff that they did.
Yeah.
The thing that I've seen, which is truly bizarre, is that the really sort of narcissistic bully will claim credit for all this stuff, even when it's obvious to everybody else in the room that they didn't do it. They're claiming they did something. Everybody can see and knows that they didn't do it. And yet they're still saying, oh, yeah, it was me that did this. And the rest of the team sort of maybe did a little bit. But it was all me and it was my idea and I took it through to completion. And those guys really must have something wrong in their head. They really must, when it's so obvious that they're lying.
Yeah.
But they've convinced themselves that they're not. And this is, you know, we've talked a long time ago about this. This is the concept of pride is essential to running a successful business.
I love that point because not only do I think is that's an individual trait, but sometimes the organization can foster that because you do have organizations, and I'm happy we're talking about, let's say, narcissism and maybe even pathology, like psychopathology, like psychopaths in the organization, because it's not just the individual that comes in and seems to succeed. It's also the organization that allows that kind of behavior to be accepted or even flourishes. Some organizations with limited checks and balances, or specifically organizations which, you know, which very care a lot about the individual performance and how, you know, how charismatic you are, and then promotes you on that basis, is where a lot of psychopaths actually flourish in the organization.
Well, and also that sort of toxicity is actually contagious. The problem is you can have a really nice working environment and they bring in a new boss and he doesn't know the history of the company.
Or she.
Yeah. I've seen relatively few toxic females, but they do exist. But I've seen way more men that are toxic, maybe because of their own inadequacies or insecurities or whatever it is. But they'll come in and they'll suddenly insert this idea that casual racism or casual sexism is okay. Because, you know, we're all friends here together and we can say these things to each other because we're all grown-ups and we know that it's possible to make these things. And it's all a bit funny, isn't it? I mean, just because he looks like that, she looks like that, we'll make them the butt of every joke. And I've seen this happen in organizations and it is awful.
Yeah.
You can take a really friendly environment where everybody enjoyed coming to work every day and destroy it in the space of a month or so.
Right. Yeah, it's often referred to as the slippery slope, right? Mm. When it's just subtle behavior start to become the norm and everyone starts to accept it And then eventually, before you know it, it's just the way of how people react and how people treat each other in the organization. So that I like that point. So you have been a founder of various companies. You've also worked in corporate. As a leader, as a manager, what can you do about that when you see that happening?
Well, you have to be aware, first of all, of what's actually going on. And then you've got to be prepared to stand up to it and do something about it. That takes, if you're not senior in the organization, that takes quite a lot to be able to do that. Normally, they'll have some sort of whistleblower complaint system through HR if it's a large organization. If it's a smaller organization, a quiet word in the ear of the boss and just say, look, this guy that you've just brought in or this lady that you just brought in is really not our cup of tea. And these are things that you need to know, and give them specific examples. On Monday morning at 10 o'clock, he or she sat down with this lady, Emily or Fred or whoever it was, and they said this to them: don't like your hair today. What did you do wrong with your hair at the weekend? You know, really nasty little needly things.
Right.
And then, I didn't mean anything by it. And they'll try and brush it
gaslight
away.
Gaslight you.
The gaslighting is just...
Well, another thing that I've seen a lot is where, you know, senior leaders seem to have so much control, that kind of involvement, I would say, also leads to kind of toxic environments as well.
Well, I mean, it comes back to my respect point, because if people respect the organization, I mean, again, I'm a positive sort of a person. So my general assumption is that people are not crooks, and that then they don't get up in the morning and decide they're going to try and cheat the company. So if they respect the company, they respect their peers, they won't be trying to cheat the company. So why should you be looking at that much fine detail? There's a process in place.
What do you think that says about someone?
Well, it says that they are probably cheating the company themselves, or most of the time when I've seen that happen, it's because they're already thinking about breaking the rules themselves. So they then logically assume everybody else is breaking the rules. So the more they try and look into what you're doing, the more I look and think, hang on, that person's probably got an ulterior motive here.
Right.
It's every sort of decision. If you know, I've seen people in large organizations really criticize the way somebody makes a cup of tea. And just as a way of exerting their control over them and saying, I'm the boss, I can say these things.
Right.
If it was in a family environment, the other person would turn around and say, don't be so stupid. I know how to make tea. But no. If it's a work environment, you've got a hierarchy. You've got some sort of artificial sense of who's responsible and who's not.
And then not to mention the culture that comes into play, because in some cultures, you do not speak up to a boss, you know, and then you've got to deal with either a narcissistic boss or a gaslighting boss. And what can you do about it, right? You can't. In some countries, you can. In the Netherlands, you can say, well, you know what, sod off and... I don't like your style and I don't like how you talk to me, and it's accepted. But in another culture, like just around the corner, even in Germany, you would never speak to a boss like that. So,
and in a lot of the Asian cultures, it's true. Completely unacceptable to say that the senior, maybe older person has done something wrong or they are behaving in an incorrect way. That's not possible. You can't criticize them. But, you know, we have to think about, well, what can people do about that?
Right.
And I often...
That was going to be my follow-up question.
Sorry. Well, I mean, the thing is, you need to remember that you're in charge of your own destiny. It's often very hard. You've got bills to pay. You've got kids to look after. You've got all sorts of things to worry about. But you need to realize it's your choice.
Yeah.
If you decide to stay there and take that sort of rubbish day in, day out, it will have a detrimental effect on everybody in your world, at home and at work.
Yeah.
And your best choice in most cases is just leave. I mean, yes, I'd love you to stand up to whoever's bullying you and whoever's giving you real bad times and is causing this heartache, because for everybody else's sake, they need to be taken out. But the best thing you could do is just leave.
And that's an interesting point, because just leave is not always possible for everyone. And if you look now at the younger generation that's in the workforce, they can't buy houses. They can't live by themselves. They can't have a car. Compare that to when we were 20 or 30 years old, we could probably do that with the income that we made. And so what we now see in the workplace is, you know, all kinds of phenomena like quiet quitting, which is just... You're still in the workplace, but you're giving your bare minimum. And so that's now a consequence of what you see. So people are not leaving that toxic environment. because they have no other option. They need to have the salary, but eventually it does have an impact on their mental health, or it does have an impact, because eventually it does, right? You can say, well, it doesn't, but over time it will have an impact on you.
You're right. And one thing I've noticed, which is maybe strange, when I was starting out my career, we were all people working together in a company. Some people were older than others, but we never thought, he's Gen Z, he's a millennial, she's this, she's a baby boomer, whatever. We never thought about grading people into these layers.
How many people were you in a company?
Oh, at one point, you know, hundreds of people. Whereas today, there is quite a large difference. And there's an age plays a really important part in it. It shouldn't do. And it's not like I'm not trying to make a point about age discrimination. I'm saying that a lot of the younger people coming into an organization will look at the older people and assume that we're completely out of touch. Maybe because of some of the things we say and the ways that we behave. Equally, the older people will look at the younger people and make judgments based on completely invalid assumptions about the way they are. But I never really saw that in the past. I mean, there was an acceptance that if you were young coming into an organization, you probably didn't have as much experience. So therefore, you probably should listen a bit more and talk a bit less. And that, not sort of on a negative way, I'm just, there was a respect.
Well, gone are the days that people will be told what to do, right? So nowadays, it's like, I don't like what you said, I'm leaving, or I'm not going to work anymore for you.
I remember my first job when I was young. I was a sales guy working for this company that made routers, and we were trying to connect the internet together. So, gosh, it was that old. But I'd sold these routers, and I had a commission package, and it said that if I sold a whole load of them, I would get paid a load of money. And I got to the end of the month, I'd made my target, and I was due my commission.
Yeah.
And it didn't materialize in my paycheck. So I went in to see the accountant, and I said, where's my money? And he said, look, Carl, you're only young. If we paid you all that money, you'd only go and waste it. I wanted to hit him. I literally wanted to hit him. I mean, it's a
What did you do?
Well, I absolutely didn't do anything because I was very emotionally mature, and I was definitely very calm, and I walked out, and I just was calm about it.
Okay.
Not a chance in hell.
You didn't cut his tires or anything like that?
There was a terrible, terrible accident in the car park, and all four of his tires were let down simultaneously, but it was an act of God. I had no idea how that happened
on the same day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So he had to get a taxi home and tell his wife why he couldn't pick his kids up from school. And I just hated the guy for the next couple of years, and generally made his life as miserable as possible. I didn't fill out my expenses properly. I deliberately did stuff but that simple act of his arrogance caused 2 years worth of disruption in the organization and changed my attitude towards the company. And in the end, I left. And it all was sort of small, you know, final nails in the coffin towards me actually leaving. And in large organizations, that happens all the time. Yeah. In smaller organizations,
well, I think also the thing is in larger organizations where, because you know this is human behavior, right? People don't always act in the best interest of the organization. Also, people are not always the most friendliest. Sometimes you're just in a bad mood and you just reacted in the wrong way. But that's why I do think that a lot of organizations, and a lot of good organizations, they do have, you know, some good checks and balances in place. They do know that they have to have conversations, reviews, etc., to discuss this. But not everything does get discussed. But that's why I guess looking at the human factor in organizations is extremely important as a way to overcome these issues. But nevertheless, the bigger the organization, the harder it is to take control of that.
One of the things that I've seen, and as you know, I've worked in tiny companies, you know, starting them from two people, growing them right the way up, and then even taking them public. But what I saw in larger organizations was this assumption that you should have an HR department. And that's not in any way a bad thing. But the problem is on the sort of lower level managers is they want to pass off their responsibilities to the HR department. So if there is a problem within their small team of half a dozen people, they won't take it on themselves to resolve it because they're too important or they're too busy. They'll say, go and talk to HR about it. Whereas actually, it should all be resolved over a cup of tea or maybe a beer or something. It's the sort of thing that managers should take responsibility for. And I've always said in my organizations, my individual managers are responsible for their own teams.
Yeah.
Look after your own team and they will look after you.
Well, and that's a good point. And also, I think the function of HR is changing rapidly, whereas before it was kind of a place where you'd complain or, you know, try to have someone fired. But, you know, nowadays, the responsibilities of speaking to an employee is moving much more towards the manager. But again, not all managers are capable of having a good conversation and getting to know their employees. And I like what you said, is that, you know, you can resolve a lot of issues very, very quickly if you just informally go and sit with someone and say, Carl, how are you doing today? I feel like shit. Why? You made me feel like shit. I'm sorry for that. What can I do about it?
Mm.
Simple human-to-human interaction can prevent so much shit from happening in the workplace. But a lot of times it doesn't, out of ego or time management or whatnot. And then it fosters and eventually it just becomes worse.
But you've got to realize, if you're the person that's going to instigate that conversation, that you correctly read the other person. If the other person is a bully, or is gaslighting you, or is a narcissist, you definitely don't want to have that conversation with them because you'll just make it worse. You'll give them ammunition. And so you go and say, oh, you know, when you said to me this morning you didn't like the color of my suit, that upset me. They'll bring that up at the next regional sales meeting. And they go, oh, there's Carl over there. He's on with a funny suit. He told me, he came into my office, you know, and told me he didn't like me commenting on his suit. So in front of 100 people, I'm going to make you feel small because of your suit. You know, silly stuff. If you give them ammunition, those people are really wicked. They'll use it against you in order, again, to support their own view of themselves.
Yeah.
Because they get stronger in their minds by making you weaker.
Well, and that's where I think also that the organizational culture is extremely important, because if you have an organizational culture or environment that's positive and that doesn't accept that kind of behavior, people are going to be more willing to speak up. Because I think that's a really interesting topic. Psychological safety has become an interesting topic nowadays in a lot of organizations. And it's your willingness to speak up, to make suggestions, but also when you see things happen that you don't agree with, that the environment makes you feel safe enough to be able to say something without retribution. And so psychological safety is really, really important to have, but not all organizations have it. And it's really interesting when I speak to a lot of organizations, say, well, yes, you know, it's part of our DNA and we think it's really important. But when you actually go and ask people, how psychologically safe do you feel to speak up here about any topic? And then you see the average score out of 5 being 2.7. That doesn't seem to be very psychologically safe.
Some of that, though, is cultural as well. It'll vary around the world. I've had the pleasure of doing business in many, many countries. And in some countries, it's naturally very much more hierarchical.
Mm.
And there won't be any of the normal mechanisms of two people just talking to each other. Peer-level communications are always graded by age.
Mm.
And it's just strange. To me, it's strange. Yeah. Whereas all the businesses I've ever set up and run have taken a bit more of a sort of West Coast American flat approach. And actually using, you know, I went back to school in 2006, did my MBA. And a couple of my professors, Goffey and Jones, had this great matrix of how to judge a successful organization. And they plotted, because it's an MBA program, had to be a matrix. They plotted shared purpose on one axis and sociability on the other axis. So shared purpose is, does everybody in the organization agree and like what you're trying to do as an organization? And sociability, my interpretation of sociability is, if you weren't working with this person, would you have them around to your house for a barbecue? So if you could get the top right-hand quadrant of that, where everybody knows what the company's about and really thinks it's great,
and they invite each other for barbecues.
And they invite you around to the house for barbecue. Then you've got a fabulous environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Everybody wants to support each other. And everybody is mutually dependent on each other.
Yeah.
So that allowed me to, in most companies I've set up, to run a sort of star system of management, where I act as a bit of a hub in the middle. And then everything else is on spokes. So, for example, if the sales guy has a problem with the product, he takes it up with the R&D guy, who then feels obliged to fix it for the sales guy, so that the sales guy can hit his targets. And so the research and development guy will take personal pride in this. None of that has to root through me. I don't need to sit there in a committee and arbitrate something or other. They do it because they're mutually responsible to each other. And that allows a far better sense of respect to run through the organization.
Mm. Thank you for that one. And actually, I wanted then to ask you, you know, before we actually get into the, you know, what are some red flags and what are some green flags in terms of either environment or management styles, I would like to ask you, because, you know, this topic of diversity and inclusion has become a very big thing across the world. And it means different things for different organizations, but also for different countries. And so, you know, but also now what we're seeing happening in the US is because, you know, DEIB is now being politicized. And what's happening to a lot of organizations is that they're also kind of going away from it. And that's kind of the new trend nowadays because of the politicization of the whole topic of DEIB. So discrimination happens a lot in the workplace. Are there any industries or any organizations or any environments that make discrimination in the workplace more prevalent?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's far more prevalent in those sort of hierarchical environments that you might call them Theory X environments. The Theory X, McClellan's model of organization, you know all this
stuff.
Yeah,
but our audience doesn't know
about it. Theory X is essentially that people go to work because you beat them, and they'll work harder if you beat them harder. Mm. And that tends to be more of a hierarchical organization. Mm. Theory Y is that if you give people the right environment, right, they will achieve wonderful things, and all you have to do is encourage them.
Right.
And I've always been more of a Theory Y type of person.
But there's also a Theory Z.
Okay.
Yeah, that follows that one, yeah.
Well, the Theory X organizations are more likely to have this discrimination problem. Yeah. And one of the ways that I've spotted that is in Theory X organizations, when you want to recruit somebody, they'll get you to write a very detailed job description of exactly what you're expecting from that person, what qualities they're going to have, and what deliverables they're going to give you. Depersonalizing already by saying, I want to hire that job and I expect those functions to exist. Yeah. So they're already taking the humanity out of it. Whereas what I'm arguing for in a Theory Y type of organization is you hire the people and you know they're not all going to be perfect and you know that they're not going to have all of the qualities you need to do that job because your belief in them will inspire them to do those things.
Sounds great on paper, but still, I can
34
see.
34 years I've been doing this, and it works.
But yeah, but I can still see on paper this looks all great, but you know, discrimination still happens. So
it does, and it's terrible.
But why does it happen? Do you think?
I really, really, really don't know. I think it's top down. I think it's the toxicity occurs at the top of the organization, and as we were saying earlier, if the top of the organization finds these things to be acceptable, then it'll sort of flow down and flow down and flow down. Having always been at the top of my organizations, I've always tried to engender a really decent sense that we don't discriminate on anything. And by recruiting people, I absolutely don't care what race, religion, color, sex, anything. I don't care.
Yeah.
I want the best people to do that job in the organization. And I want to have them and I want them to stay forever.
Yeah, but I think, bringing it back to the environment, right, where you actually create an environment where everyone feels that they are part of, regardless of their differences, what they bring to the organization. How do you create an environment that embraces everyone's differences? I think that's a nice way of looking at it, because still people can feel excluded, right? You can still be working in an environment where everyone says we're diverse and we're very inclusive, but still a lot of people can, for one reason or another, can still feel very excluded in that perspective. And it's hard to take into consideration everyone's needs. But I think the psychology behind this, right, the identity aspect in an organization of what does the company stand for and how do you, and again, bringing it back to the environment, how do you create an environment where everyone feels that they don't have to check in their identity and who they are at the door? Mm-hmm. And they can bring their full selves to work. Because psychologically, if you can't bring your full self to work, then you're not going to be able to perform at your highest level. But on that note, in light of time, I would love to just kind of get two red flags from you and two green flags in terms of assessing either environments or managers in terms of their abilities and behaviors.
Well, the first thing I'd say on red flags is if anybody starts shouting in the office, that's unacceptable, unless it's in jubilation and a shared success for everybody in the office and you get to ring the bell or do what you do. But if somebody's shouting in the office, they need to just be out of that environment and go and take a little walk and calm down. But almost always, if somebody's shouting, it's, unless it's really bad, it's because they're bullying somebody. Occasionally, you'll get somebody that is bullied who starts shouting back, in which case that should be a big red flag to you as the manager that you've got a serious conflict problem in the organization. But shouting is my number one thing. And the second thing that I'd say is a red flag is lack of respect. If you can see that people are trying to demean or belittle other people in the organization, that is completely toxic and it's contagious. You need to stamp it out and get rid of it. Green flags, I always look for organizations where everybody really wants to be there. You can smell it. You walk into an organization where people really, really enjoy that environment. I've managed it twice in my career. I've created companies where people think it is brilliant to be there. When they go home and they have their friends over for a dinner party on a Friday night, and one friend says, oh, how's it going with the new job? And they can't stop them enthusing for half an hour about how wonderful it all is and how their colleagues are so great and how they're really changing the world and they're really making a difference. That is fantastic. And you can really get the sense of that. And other people do. And the customers find that it's contagious as well.
Can we call that maybe positive toxicity?
Yeah. it's positive thinking for sure. And the other thing, which for me is a green flag, is if people are relaxed in the environment together and they can really share more information. You find in organizations that are negatively toxic that people don't know much about each other. They don't know how many kids they've got. They don't know if you're married or divorced. They don't know where you live. They don't know what car you drive. They have none of that information.
Yeah.
Whereas in nice environments, people, it's a little bit of banter, but it's healthy stuff. It's, you know, my kid was sick this morning. Oh, yeah, well, my kid had the same problem last week. And suddenly you've got a bond.
Right.
That's nothing to do with work, and people can share.
Yeah.
Humans.
I like that.
Make businesses. That's it. It's all about humanity.
Maybe what you're saying is, come to work as human first and as marketeer second.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That'll be good.
I like that. Thank you so much, Carl, for today and your contribution and sharing your perspective. It was a wonderful conversation. I loved it.
Thanks, Ali.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So we had a great conversation here today together with Carl Felder, and we talked about what are toxic environments and how do we identify them. And I think one of the key things that he said during this podcast is, realizing that you are in a toxic environment is when you realize that when you wake up in the morning that you don't want to go to bed. You feel sick to the bone having to go back into that environment. And when we actually try to identify what were some of the characteristics of a toxic environment, one thing that came up was lack of respect. So lack of respect seems to be a major issue, and also a way of understanding how other people treat you if they don't treat you respectfully, if they gaslight you in the organization and belittle you and say small things to you just to make you feel bad, are clear signs that you are definitely working in a toxic environment. Now, it's not always easy to leave, but the best thing to do in many cases is to leave that environment. Go where you're celebrated, not where you're tolerated. And what we also talked about was the aspect of discrimination and that happens in many organizations. We also realize that, you know, part of how we think and how we behave inherently as human beings also kind of makes us much more biased to make often quick but not really good decisions and judgments about people, but also how the environment can actually help you to prevent that. And having good leadership and good management in place is definitely a way to minimize the impact of discrimination and bad behavior in the workplace. So that's what we talked about today. I hope that you enjoyed this session of Red Flags, Green Flags. And of course, I am super excited about my new book that has just recently come out called Red Flags, Green Flags, Modern Psychology for Everyday Drama, where I also talk about work relationships, but also about dating, family, and romance. And what are the red flags and green flags that you need to identify specifically to make better decisions in your life? So definitely go out and buy the book, and let's make Red Flags, Green Flags a global bestseller.
Are you ready?